This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
Hour number two, Alan Hahn, Bart Scott, ESPN Radio, and we are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline, and right now on the Goodyear Hotline, we bring in Todd McShay, whose mock draft has been released today, the very first one. It is mock draft season, and that gets everybody excited because we're all fired up, especially if you're a fan like me of a team that generally is at the very beginning of these mock drafts almost annually. So it's great for me, but it's even greater, Todd, and thanks for joining the show, to have you back and to have you working. I was hearing you on all the different shows, putting in the work today, and it's just, again, hoping all is well with you. Thanks so much for joining us. Let's just begin with, I think, the common theme each year is quarterbacks. But this isn't that draft. And Bart had a caller that was asking, like, the Detroit Lions, you know, should they trade their pick at multiple picks? Is this that type of draft where if you're high up in the draft, it's better to get you might get more quantity than quality in this one?
I would agree with it. The problem is you need a dance partner. And without quarterbacks, the first quarterback I had coming off the board was the Pittsburgh at number 12, Kenny Pickett from Pitt. And without quarterbacks that really belong in the top 10 in this year's class, typically that's where we see all the trades made, or a vast majority of first round trades in terms of move up or to go get quarterbacks. And while I love Aiden Hutchinson, the defensive end from Michigan, who I go in number one to the Lions, and I love Kayvon Thibodeau, I think he's probably the best athlete and best, you know, most skilled player in the entire draft, just in terms of his physical ability out of Oregon. I don't see a lot of teams being willing to give up another first round pick or, you know, a pair of second round picks to get up to the number one or number two slot to go get them. So I think we'll probably, because of the lack of quarterbacks, see fewer trades, certainly in the top 10 and maybe in the first round than we're used to seeing.
Now, sometimes when you get to the middle part of that first round, that's where the action kind of starts at 15, where teams identify, okay, well, you know, we can move up a couple spots. It won't cost us as much. You know, what's the deepest position you think going into this draft?
I would say, you know, I would classify it as edge. So edge defenders, mostly defensive ends, but guys that could be 34 outside linebackers. I mean, you start with Hutchinson and Thibodeau, as I mentioned, could go 1-2 in either order. They're both elite players. Then you've got David Ojabo, who I've got going 10 overall to the Eagles in this mock draft, coming out of Michigan as well. So Hutchinson and Ojabo, both edge defenders that could be off the board in the first 10 picks. Then DeMarvin Leal is a 290-pound defensive end from Texas A&M who could kick inside and kind of play that versatile outside-inside role. And then you start to look down the line a little bit more. And I think Trayvon Walker from Georgia is very much underrated as a defensive end, exceptional physical tools. Cam Thomas, defensive end from San Diego State, is another one. Myjai Sanders from Cincinnati, who you'll see in one of the semifinal games. There are so many talented edge rushers. I think you get into the, you know, second, third round with guys that you think can come in and at least make an impact as rookies, as pass rush specialists, and maybe as every down starters right away.
Does Thibodeau give you the same vibes that Michael Parsons has when you think about his upside and his athleticism to be able to come in and be an instant impact in this league if he comes in?
To a certain extent, you know, you got to remember Parsons didn't play last year. He opted out with COVID. He was an impact player when he was on the field. Don't get me wrong, but you saw the ability. I remember just standing next to him. I mean, the guy is long. He's central casting, so athletic and well put together. And then you see him on the field and he's tough to throw around because of the arm length and his athleticism and coverage. He could get after the quarterback at Penn State and was a sideline to sideline run defender. So from a just like raw tool standpoint, I see some of the similarities in terms of a guy who's just going to come in and already right away, he's ready from a physical tools standpoint to compete with grown men in the NFL. The difference with Parsons is, and you knew this coming in, that he can do so many different things. You know, he can play off the ball at that Mike linebacker spot. You can rush him off the edge. You can blitz him between the tackles, and he also can drop in coverage. So there are not many guys that come in right away that you look at and say he can do just about everything that you look for from from a linebacker or a front seven defender, and he can play so many different positions and roles. So that's kind of the difference, is the versatility. But in terms of physical tools, yeah, there's some similarities with the length and the ability to win with both speed and power, which, you, as you well know, you've got to be able to present both of those as strengths to offensive tackles, so that they know that they, if they kind of overload against the power, they can get beat by speed and vice versa.
Todd McShay joining us right now on the Goodyear Hotline. We're talking about his first mock draft, and yes, mock draft season has begun. You can see it on ESPN.com. And Todd, here in New York, you have picks 4 through 9 involve 4 picks for both the New York teams, 2 by the Jets, 2 by the Giants, by way of trades, of course. On the Giants side of things, you have them – actually, I think both teams, you have them taking defensive players exclusively. Is that based on the top of this draft is so strong – on the defensive side of the ball, or is it some other intel that you have?
Well, it's a combination of both. I mean, both teams need to upgrade their defense. And for the Giants, you know, the two other factors that I kind of put into play were, first of all, Daniel Jones. He's coming up on that fifth-year option. He's had trouble staying healthy. We see the talent. I mean, he's a big quarterback. He's got mobility. He can be accurate when things are working well. But the turnovers and the durability struggles make you wonder if he's going to be the long-term answer. But sitting at 5 and 7 in terms of their first-round picks, I just don't see a quarterback, as I said before, in this class that you're going to bring in and utilize one of those picks that's going to be an immediate upgrade or a long-term upgrade. You know, eventually maybe Kenny Pickett from Pitt or Matt Corral from Ole Miss or even Malik Willis could – from Liberty could wind up being, you know, that guy and providing an upgrade. But you don't look at those guys right now on tape and say, I'm confident, like highly, highly confident that we're getting a significant upgrade at quarterback. So that played into it. I think the strength is clearly on defense. I mean, I think 8 of my top 10, 9 of my top 11 players off the board were on the defensive side. With, I should say, 8 of the top 11. 1 wide receiver in Jameson Williams and 2 offensive tackles were mixed in. So for the Giants, they're sitting there, and there's not an offensive tackle that you love at 5 when you've got Karlaftis, a defensive end that can come in, and they need edge rush help. And then they're sitting at 7 after the 2 offensive tackles are off the board. And N'Kobe Dean, I think, has been one of the best defensive players in the country this past year as an off-the-ball linebacker. So that fills 2 spots. But again, you haven't addressed the offensive line, and you haven't addressed quarterback. The other option for the Giants is, with veteran quarterbacks, elite veteran quarterbacks, potentially being on the market, you know, with Aaron Rodgers and his situation in Green Bay, Deshaun Watson and the off-the-field issues and situation in Houston, and Russell Wilson in Seattle, does this become trade capital, if you will, to give away these picks 5 and 7 as it currently stands, to go get one of these elite quarterbacks that you know immediately provides an instant impact and an instant upgrade over Daniel Jones. So that has to come into consideration with the Giants. I think it's in consideration for the Lions, who have picks 1 and 25 in the first. Even the Eagles, who have 3 picks between 10 and 20 in the first round in this year's draft as it currently stands. So any of those teams that could be looking to upgrade quarterback with multiple picks in the first round, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, it shakes out with the veterans, like I mentioned, Rodgers, Wilson, and Watson.
It's really, if you think about it, too, that the assets this year more than ever, mainly because, as you said, always the most valuable pieces in the top of a draft is quarterbacks, and this isn't the year for that. With that in mind, last year was. And from a Jets perspective, I have to ask this because it's just from what I see, and it's that I always use the demonstrated performance of past history. Did the Jets make a huge mistake, not in taking Zach Wilson, but in basically just feeding him to the Lions, no pun intended, right away in week 1, rather than have a veteran quarterback in place, knowing that he doesn't, like Trevor Lawrence, number one, had 3 years experience and a huge resume. Zach Wilson hardly played college football to begin with and didn't do it at a very high level when it comes to competition. Was it the right move to bring him in with Mike White as the backup and just say to him, go ahead, swim?
You know, it's tough when you draft a quarterback at number 2 overall. And, you know, and I agree. Listen, it was his freshman year he played, and then he got injured his sophomore year, and then his junior year he played that season as well. He had experience, but not an ideal number of starts. And also, as you mentioned, BYU not necessarily playing the competition. But what I found frustrating was that they threw him in there, which is fine, and a lot of teams are doing that with rookie quarterbacks. But it wasn't like look at how Mac Jones was handled in that same division with New England, with Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels. And everything was done to protect Mac Jones early in the season, get his confidence going. A lot of outlet throws to the running backs. It was a huge percentage of throws to his running backs. Screen games, screen to receivers and the backs. Working the tight end in the middle of the field. He was never really responsible for winning a game by driving the ball down the field. He wasn't put in very many 3rd-and-12 situations where they said, let's go get this first down and throw him to the wolves. They would try a screen or some sorts of things. And if it was a punt, it's a punt, and we'll live to play another down. So, they handled that well. And as the season progressed and as he gained confidence, they started opening up the playbook a little bit more, and you saw more down the field throws, and we've seen how that's gone for the Patriots. With Zach, he came in with a supporting cast that wasn't nearly as good as New England's, and the Patriots' offensive line doesn't even compare. They're so much better than what the Jets have. The Jets don't have great weapons at wide receiver or in the backfield. So he came in, and it was kind of all on his shoulders. They were asking him to throw the ball down the field and make big plays and be a difference maker and a playmaker from week one. And that's just asking too much of a rookie quarterback. And then the injury obviously happened, and it's never been the same. So I've had multiple people ask me today, should the Jets use one of these picks on a quarterback? First of all, in this class, whether it's Pickett, Corral, Willis, Desmond Ridder from Cincinnati, Sam Howell, North Carolina, you're not getting a better quarterback than what Zach Wilson can be. I'm convinced of that. Secondly, you have to go, I think, at least 3 years. So 2 more seasons after this. Joe Douglas, the general manager, knows he's got to get a better offensive line. He's got to get a lot more playmakers on the defensive side. He's got to get more playmakers around Wilson on the offensive side before they can legitimately sit back and make a solid evaluation of what Wilson can be. So I don't think that's anywhere close to the game plan in terms of drafting a quarterback or bringing in a veteran. I think what they want to do is continue to prove around him and find a system that's going to work for him and see where they are in 2 years from now.
That's why in the first round, I mean, I get these man crushes on people, right? I had one on Becton. And I look at what the DNA of an organization is. And the Jets DNA has been outstanding impact centers. Kevin Mowai is going to be a Hall of Famer. Nick Mangold is going to eventually be a Hall of Famer. And I just can't see how they can pass on Tyler Linderbaum with what he's able to do in this game and that zone scheme, like Travis Kelce, being able to get up to the second level, being a center that's strong enough to anchor but also can pull and get on the perimeter to add to the edge rush attempts and things of that sort. So I know that you have them taking 2 defensive players, and I think it's an opportunity for them to move back. Acquire more picks like they did for Sam Darnold, or like they gave up for Sam Darnold, maybe get a 3rd second-round draft pick this year and be able to get a guy like Tyler, because I think that completes the puzzle. Because I think
I know Joe Douglas well, and I think he absolutely will move back if the right trade package presents itself. He was raised under Ozzie Newsome, and they did a great job always in Baltimore of
moving back,
staying pat. Picks. And getting the best player available regardless of position, or moving back and taking advantage of teams that are eager to move up. Now, in the Jets situation, their own pick is at number 4 right now.
Right.
And I had them taking Derek Stingley, the cornerback from LSU, at that spot. Their 2nd pick in the 1st round is at number 9 currently, but that's the Seahawks pick. And if the Seahawks go and win a couple more games down the stretch, that pick at 9 could wind up being 12, 13, 14. And with Linderbaum, I agree. He's, I think, without question, the best interior offensive lineman in this class. He's got a chance to go on and have, if not a Hall of Fame career, be a multiple-time Pro Bowler. He's that talented and he's that good. And I think in this class, you're looking somewhere in that 11 to 20 range is where Linderbaum is going to come off the board. And if they're sitting there because of the Seahawks you know, winning a couple games, sitting in there at 13 or 14, that could wind up being their second of two first-round picks.
Yeah, right now, as we're looking at Todd McShay's mock drafts, Todd has him at 16 to the Cincinnati Bengals, which, again, with Joe Burrow, makes a ton of sense, of course, the center from Iowa. Todd, I'm curious about this. When you put these together and you look at the drafts and all the years that you put in the research on this, and I've always said this, a lot of times with some of these picks, it's about situation. And like Trevor Lawrence is a perfect example. When you see what he's been through this season, and you know the college game very well, so you certainly know Urban Meyer very well. When you see that whole situation there, here's a player that you watched, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, you looked at him as a generational quarterback, yes? You saw him
absolutely.
As somebody, right. So when you see this year and what he's going through, is this another example of when players are drafted, it's not necessarily their performance or what they project to be, it's where they go and what how they're coached, how they're taught, and all that stuff, right? Isn't that that's the variable in this whole thing?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a huge variable, and it's the variable that, unfortunately, leading up to and through the draft, you can't predict. But once they land in a place, then you know at least who the supporting cast is and what the culture is in the organization, what the offensive coordinator has done, what the quarterback coach has done. But you don't have that luxury leading up to the draft when you're trying to project where they go. But I there's so many parts, especially at the quarterback position. With Trevor Lawrence, you know, I just think back, look at Peyton Manning's rookie year. Look at Troy Aikman's rookie year. It's not about your rookie year. It's about what you learn from your rookie year. And then it's also up to the organization then to have the people in place to get the right assets around you. And, you know, in Dallas, the situation with Troy Aikman, I know we're going back a long time, but in any case, you know, you look at improvement over your career. A lot of times it comes with better personnel around you. And that's what, you know, they used their second pick on Travis Etienne and thought he was going to come in as the former Clemson running back and backmate with Trevor Lawrence and come in and make a huge impact. But, his injuries have prevented him from doing such. So you'll get Etienne back next year. Now you got to go get difference makers at wide receiver, and you've got to shore up that offensive line, which has been really abysmal. And so it's hard to evaluate, I guess, is my point, with Zach Wilson, as we talked about in the Jets, and Trevor Lawrence with the Jaguars, when you know that they're every single week, when they wrap up the game plans and they're getting ready to go into Sunday's game, they're just outmatched. They're outflanked. And there's nothing that Trevor can do about that. He can't get his receivers to separate and go make plays on the ball. He can't get his offensive line to protect him a little bit longer, just a half a second or a second longer. That has, you know, that's out of his hands. And so it's about getting the better players around him and making sure that Trevor doesn't lose confidence during this rookie year. And I don't think he has. Listen, early in the season, he was struggling. Then he went through about a 6-7 game span where I thought he was starting to really ascend and play to the level that you would expect out of a rookie quarterback with that ability. And then it's kind of leveled off. And so much is going on in the organization. So much is going on with Urban Meyer and the coaching staff. But I see a team, if I'm just looking at it from a GM's perspective, we have got to get better on the line and get guys on the perimeter that actually can threaten. And I personally believe they need a new offensive coordinator that's going to tailor things to Trevor Lawrence and to be a little bit more creative and allow him, you know, just understand we don't have time to protect. So we can't do some of the things that we're trying to do. Our offensive, our passing game, you know, there you see clips of guys running into each other and two receivers in the same zone. Like, these are things that can't be allowed in the college level, let alone the NFL. And so I think there needs to be some coaching changes as well, too.
Yeah, things that are completely out of his control. And for a lot of these guys at the top of the draft, they're just not used to this because throughout most of their careers, they've just been on the dominant teams or they've been the dominant player. Todd, again, the mock draft for Todd McShay, the very first one is out. You can see it on ESPN.com. Todd, you sound great. It's great to have you back. Thanks so much for the time. We greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, fellas. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
All right. Todd McShay again joining us on the Goodyear Hotline. It's Barton Hama coming to you live from Seaport District, Pier 17, and brought to you by Chase. So, coming up. Is it time, as we were talking about the Giants, is it time for them to blow it all up and hit the reset button? Well, that depends on who you are talking to. Joe Judge is very confident in his position, and he has good reason to be confident, and he wants you to know every single reason. Wait till you hear that coming up after Bart tells us about ZipRecruiter.
If you're a business owner, it can be tough to hire the top talent for your team, especially when you're competing with the other businesses to find the right people. So how can you get the hiring edge? ZipRecruiter. Next Key marketing manager Erin Hargy loves ZipRecruiter Invite to Apply. She says, they get my job in front of the right people, and I instantly see great candidates, and I can invite them to apply to my job. See for yourself. Go to this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/BART, to try ZipRecruiter for free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BART. Back after this.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bart and Han.
Well, I'm the head coach. Everything in the program reflects on me, Jordan. I don't ever shy away from that. I don't make excuses, and I don't hide from that either. I'm not a finger pointer. I'm an excuse maker, okay, in terms of the direction the program's going, but there's some key foundational pieces that are being put in place, and there's a lot of things we're making progress on pushing forward.
Welcome back. Bart and Han, ESPN Radio. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Commercial insurance through Progressive protects your business and your dream. Choose from over 30 coverage options at ProgressiveCommercial.com. We good?
We scoochy.
I got a text, by the way. I won't tell you who it's from, but it reads this. Bart looks like he's wearing an old-school Steelers jersey. And that'll get him to switch it back. It does look like an old-school Steelers jersey.
No, they stuff goes sideways, man.
Just saying. It looks a little old-school.
Man, I need a haircut in the worst way.
Going a little shaggy.
Yeah, man, it's been tough, man. I've been all over the place, man. It's been probably about a month.
This is your busy season, though.
Yeah.
Man of many jobs. Oh. And then on top of it, the Amazon service, which
peak season.
This is peak season.
Yes.
And again, shout out to all the delivery drivers out there, not just Amazon, everybody else. We had you all part of the show last week. It doesn't mean it's over. We continue to salute you for all your efforts to make sure Santa Claus makes his rounds.
Not all heroes wear capes, man, but right now they are Santa Claus. Well, man.
And you're wearing your mask, which is nice. We might be getting to that point again soon. Yeah, things are going in sports, man.
Man, you look at the uptick just in the NFL. I think it was.
And the NBA.
Before it was, 37? But now officially I think it's up to 40. A couple players on the
positive
Jets.
Positive tests.
And now they're asking people, the teams, I think they're on a mandate for Tier 1 and Tier 2.
Yeah, to get a booster.
Yeah,
not the players now. This is team personnel, staff, anyone that's around the players. That's become a thing. In the NBA, same thing. Chicago Bulls have postponed 2 games.
Yeah.
Indiana still without their coach, Rick Carlisle. The Knicks have 3 players out now for tonight's game.
And the thing is,
the Brooklyn Nets have we had 4 or 5 players on the Brooklyn Nets.
I mean, you talk about losing Ramsey yesterday. You lose that game, and Ramsey's a big part of it.
Last night's game, there was 2 positives.
Higbee and Ramsey. Mm-hmm. Ramsey, those are 2 of their most important players. If they would have lost that game, it's going to come to that point in the postseason. So, listen, I know, and that's probably what pisses Bruce Arians off more than anything.
Teams have got to have different protocols.
But that's probably why it pisses Bruce Arians off more than anything. The fact that he was bragging and saying, hey, we're all 100% vaccinated, knowing that Antonio Brown had lied to him, and the fact that he was walking around probably acting as if he's not, and then people are believing, not that if you are vaccinated, you can't pass it, but the fact that you lied about it, and, you know, here I am, a guy who's beat cancer twice, and you making me vulnerable because I'm having open conversations with you and not knowing that you're not vaccinated, and the fact that you lied to him and coming back. So it's a real discussion in Tampa. when he comes off of the suspension by the NFL,
whether or not they're going to play
if he's going to be – no, if he's going to be on the team.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant is whether
yeah, so it's crazy.
What they're doing.
I mean, you look at what Perriman did. You're like, yeah, maybe we don't need him. But, listen, Antonio Brown makes him a lead, and sometimes, you know what I mean, it's – you know, production breeds tolerance is what coaches always told me.
Mm.
And maybe they just say, you know what, we get this last win out of him, use him, and get him up out of here, but he can't go forward because I have to be able to trust you. But well, in some game this year, COVID is going to cost somebody a player, and it's going to be the difference between them winning and losing.
Well, what we'll find out, though, is if these leagues right now, the NHL, the NBA, and the NFL, will start to impose similar mandates that they played through last year.
Virtual this week for the Jets.
Right. Well, yeah, because of what they're going through. Now, but I'm saying, like, I wonder if the leagues, because, you know, 2 years ago, everybody shut down. Nobody knew what to do.
Yeah.
But you do have the mandates that worked last year. They did work.
Yeah.
And maybe you just got to go back to that life again, which is all more virtual things, you know, media-wise, contact-wise, but also in players being able to – because right now what you had was everybody was back to normal. Players going out to dinner, players doing all this stuff because we thought, okay, you're vaccinated, everything's fine.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily the case. And with the new variant, is it something that they just got to tighten up some of the rules? So we'll see where that goes. But with that in mind, and one of the headlines in sports and several other that we've been talking about already and we've talked about with you and others, including Todd McShay and Keyshawn Johnson, what we have now is a time where we let the headline makers do the talking in a segment, Bart, we like to call
Audio Files.
The Audio File. The Audio File.
So Joe Judge, as we've already talked about, you remember yesterday we talked about how Joe Judge had these statements about the direction. The foundation was poured.
Poured.
Not poor. It was poured. And
I think he sent a message saying it had double rebar in it, too.
He followed up yesterday in what I found really funny is columnist Steve Politi from in New Jersey. He said that it was a 1,688-word diatribe where he doubled down on his position with the franchise, what he sees, direction, and why he talks about the positive things that he sees. So let's begin first about him being able to see in his team's eyes.
Oh,
I look them dead in the eye, and I could see they're with me.
Man, I've said this from the beginning. I'm not interested in coming in and having some kind of quick flash. I'm not interested in shortcuts. I'm not interested in quick fixes. I want to do this the right way. And when I took this job, I made it very, very clear that I was only going to do this if, you know, we were all committed to doing this the right way. And that's been something that's been very clear from ownership on down. I'm very happy with the support the ownership gives. Both families are tremendous people to work for. And I know this team is very, very important to them. And to be honest with you, you know, it's their family business. And you know what? Football is my family business, too. So I take a lot of pride in what we do. And the product is important to me, not only just, you know, the wins and losses, which is ultimately in this business the most important part, but it's also how you do it and how you prepare, how you conduct yourself throughout the course of a week, how your team represents you on and off the field, all right, and how the players reflect, all right, what you're trying to represent within the community and the city you represent.
Yeah.
Now, I played the wrong cut.
Everything he said.
That was about the family business thing. We'd talk a little family business over here. All right, we're going to sit down at the table. We're going to talk some business.
And I told him.
And he let him know, I'm not taking his job if we're not going to do it. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, sure you're not.
But he's letting you know that ownership understands where he is, that he understands, and they're all in lockstep. So anybody talking about Joe Judge potentially losing his job or this house cleaning that we think the Giants need, Joe Judge was there to tell you, ain't going to happen. Now, this goes back, this is what I was referencing before, about what he sees in the eyes of his players, which tells him he believes that things are heading in the right direction.
I can tell every morning when I start my squad meeting where the team's at. I can tell by looking at eyes. I look at eyes all the time. I tell the players, I'm always looking at eyes because I can see everything in your eyes and you can't hide it. And I can see when their eyes are intent and they're engaged and they're working on getting better as a team and they're working on playing for the man next to them. I can see that. I can see when a guy's disengaged too. And when I see that, I got to grab a guy, pull him to the side and figure out what makes him tick and get him back involved with the team and make sure that this guy's, you know, on the same pace as everybody else. But I can see the eyes in our guys. I can see the eyes before a game. I can see the eyes yesterday at halftime knowing they're going to go out there and they're going to continue to fight and we're going to claw our way back in the game. And I can see their eyes after the game to understand that we didn't play well enough to win, but we're going to show up, all right, as a team on Wednesday, we're going to go to work. And that's what we're always going to do.
Now, as you can see how he got the job, right?
Yeah, so he says all the right things. I'm glad his eyes work, but I wonder if his ears work. Because what happens is I want to hear what the conversations is when they away from that meeting, when they're sitting in the locker room, when they're clicked up eating at the lunchroom table. See, your eyes are important, but your ears are even more important because you got to hear what they're saying. Because they're going to tell, you know, they're going to, listen, they understand where they are, right? You can get them fired, right? Unless you're a guy that's secure, you're not going to, you can be, oh, he want eyes. Here's eyes. I got eyes. Oh, you're like, this guy's in.
So you're not buying any of this?
It sounds
like pretty confident. Like, this is what I do.
Let me tell you, how does he know what he do? He never even was a coordinator. How the hell he know what to do? Coach special team. Like, what are you talking about? What he do?
He's never led a leader. Judge, from his press conference on,
you can win a press conference.
Very good at saying the right things that sound, wow, this sounds really good.
Here's the reality.
But the results do not follow the same consistency of what he's saying.
So here's the reality, though, right? The reality is you went in and spent a lot of money the last couple of years. The reality is that you have two teams right now, the Washington football team, that's in the playoffs. They're technically kind of rebuilding.
Philadelphia Eagles.
Philadelphia Eagles are very competitive. Right, the Philadelphia
Eagles. With a young coaching staff with no experience, just sort of like you.
And a year later than you. Mm-hmm. Guess what? They got the same two first-round draft picks that you have to improve their football team next year. The Washington football team has an opportunity to go and bring some more people back. And they're going to get people back that's healthy. Dallas Cowboys are leaps and bounds better than you. So you got a lot of catching up to do.
Yep.
And you haven't showed us anything. Like, okay, this is year two. Year three is put up or shut up time for any head coach. So you can get away with talking and sounding great and talking over the heads of non-football people, but at some point you got to have some type of result.
All right, we'll have more from Joe Judge coming up in a little bit.
It's a gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, it really is, though. All right, we don't have time for the last cut, but we'll get to this too because it's always good to hear from Jerry. But we will do that, of course, coming up. In fact, with that in mind, Bart, because that is audio files. Was the NFL easy for you when you first got in the league? Would you say like, yeah, this is easy? So I think high motor guys.
It was easier than I thought. I thought it was going to be a lot harder.
Yeah. Leave it right there because there is a player who said exactly that. He said, you know what? League's pretty easy for me. And I want to get your reaction to him saying that coming up next. Bart and Hahn, ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Bart and Hahn.
Welcome back, Bart and Hahn, ESPN Plus, ESPN Radio. Bart, tonight, history most likely will happen at the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden in New York City, as Steph Curry is 2 threes away from setting the new three-point record in NBA history.
Great.
I know you're not thrilled because, you know, it's at the expense of the home team, but it still is a great feat to have. And a perfect thing to have on the stage that is the Mecca, as they call it in basketball. And so the question that we're asking is, what stage in all of sports is the best one to have something of significance, like a record, a historical moment, something like that? So when it comes to basketball, Kobe Bryant scored 61 points in a game at Madison Square Garden. You had Linsanity at its greatest height moment happen at Madison Square Garden. You know, things have happened in the building.
Do you want that to
LeBron
be
LeBron James, a 50-point triple-double at Madison Square Garden? Like, you've seen this stuff. Willis Reed walked out with like one leg and won Game 7 for the Knicks in 1970 at Madison Square Garden. There are moments in time in history, Bernard King scoring 60 on Christmas Day, that, you know, the Garden stage is like the best stage in basketball. Where would be in another sport, like in the NFL, if a moment was going to happen, a big moment, would it be at Lambeau? Like, what would be the the best stage in football?
See, it's tough, man, because football's a little different. You know what I mean? Because
well, aren't many venerable buildings. I mean, Lambeau was really
good. See, I would probably go more to baseball when you think about
Fenway Park.
Yeah, Fenway Park, the old
Dodger Stadium.
The original Tiger Stadium before they tore it
down.
Well,
but I'm saying what exists now.
Yeah.
Like if there was a moment to happen,
Fenway.
What's the
Fenway
best place
or Yankee
to
Stadium?
Have it?
Fenway or Yankee Stadium?
Even Yankee Stadium's only, you know, like, what, 12, 13 years old? It's not that old.
Yeah, so Fenway.
Fenway's the one that the ghosts are still in that building.
Yeah, because the Giants even got rid of their stadium where they used to go out in the canal with the canoes and when the Barry Bonds.
That's what they have now. They have that now. They used to play at the Stick.
Yeah.
That's where the Giants used to play. Candlestick. So I guess there really isn't. You that what you're telling me?
See, because that's
like
the thing.
When there's a
big moment happening. The Garden is one of the very few places that instead of tearing down and making better, they renovated it. And they kept the old mystique there.
Yeah, the ghosts are still in the building.
Exactly.
So, all the way back to 1967.
So it's no other buildings like that because everybody's went with a bigger, better building because New York is what it is. It's not a lot of real estate. They decided to gut it and to improve it and put all the money into it to modernize it. You know how hard? Well, you know, of course.
I lived through it.
That's difficult to do while still playing.
Yep.
Right? But they did it. And they went through that. And that's why New York, you think about, is one of the most innovative places. It's the only place where you can do that.
Like, you have the All England Club for Wimbledon. I mean, that's if anything intense is going to happen, Wimbledon's where it would be.
Yeah.
Augusta in golf.
Augusta,
right? If anything's going to happen, it's Augusta, right? Yeah. That's always special. College football, would you say the Rose Bowl? Or the LA Coliseum?
Yeah, like, the Rose Bowl.
Memorial,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Would it be something like that?
That's the only time it opens
Texas?
Up.
Or Texas? Is it, what's the stadium?
You're talking about the Astrodome?
No.
That's closed down.
No. The one at Texas. Daytona in racing, obviously. And in hockey, I'm going to throw it out to the Bell Center.
Yeah.
In Montreal, this is something special.
Yeah, Joe Louis shut down. They tore Joe Louis down.
I'll tell you what, the Joe was a pretty special place as well.
Throw the octopus, hit someone, hit cool. A player in the face with an octopus.
I covered a Stanley Cup Finals there or two. And yeah, so I would say, you know, something like that. But it's just there's something about certain buildings, something arena stadiums.
The MGM.
That means something.
The MGM boxing.
More. Yeah. So what is it? Let us know at Bart and Han. We'll be back in 10 seconds.
Caesar's Palace. Renegade. And I purposely did it off beat. Meanwhile, Eminem killed Jay-Z on this one. That's why Nas had to say Eminem murdered you on your own tape.
Yeah, Ether.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's still.
This is one of the realest beats ever, though. This and Mobb Deep, Quiet Storm.
Yeah, Quiet Storm's unbelievable.
This is one of the best beats.
Quiet Storm is so ominous that you almost feel like somebody's creeping up. Like when you hear Quiet Storm, you just start looking around, like you hear the thunder. And you just you start looking around like, what?
See, Lil' Kim doing her little dance. Like Lil' Kim, like you jerk it to you. What the hell is that?
Listen to Man of the Arena podcast. It's a 10-part series exploring how sports impacts our everyday lives through the lens of Tom Brady's career. Available wherever you get your podcasts and brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. For mortgage experience you can be a fan of, Rocket can. All right, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. So Micah Parsons, who's had a terrific year, he said, quote, "I don't really think the NFL's hard. I think they got some really good, really great players around here, but I think it's a bunch of players that worked really hard, and I think it rubs off on whatever you practice against, like guys like Lael Collins." He said, "When I'm going against Lael and I'm challenging him every down, saying, what can I do there? How can I make this better?" So you went to Baltimore, you were with the Ravens, and you were a guy that was undrafted. Nobody knew who you were.
Yep.
And yet you went into a culture that was probably perfect for you, right?
Yeah.
And you said to me before we went to break, when I asked you, you know, did you find the NFL easy when you first got here? And you said, yes. It wasn't as hard as you thought it would be.
For me, from a physical standpoint, now listen, Michael Parsons comes in a much better player than I was, right? But
he's a high motor guy just like you were.
Yeah, and he's an attitude guy. He's a chip on the shoulder guy. But this is what makes – for me, it's more the mental part of – football that really changes things, right? And everybody, you know, you look right there at his sack record, you know, all those guys came in as pass rushers. This dude is a blitzer. He's a guy that they put down.
ESPN Plus showing now, Julius Peppers, Reggie White, Leslie O'Neal, Joey Bosa, and Bradley Chubb on this list with Micah Parsons. Most sacks in first 13 career games. He has 12.
Yeah.
Peppers had 13, and Reggie White
had
13.
But all those guys are defensive ends. They made their living. They got into the league by doing that. He's a middle linebacker. He's a blitzer. This is different, right? But he's been put down to the sink position where they did it, and
they're using his strength.
It's the thing.
Taking advantage of it.
And it's the thing. He doesn't even have any pass rush moves. It's just pretty much a speed rush and a bull rush, and he's getting there. If he ever learned how to use his hands, swipe, spend time with some actual pass rushers, he'll be able to add that to his repertoire. But we've seen a lot of guys come in the league and say the league was easy. It doesn't stay easy for guys like him.
Hmm. Why is that? Because
now you want the league's attention, oh, you're going to get it. And then they're going to learn how that team uses you. They're going to try and take it away. That's why guys have the sophomore slump. I mean, I'm sure right now, Jarrar Chase, like, man, this is easy. You know, Justin Jefferson is like, man, this is easy. You know, Ed Reed came in, man, this is easy. And then you have to adjust to the adjustment. So let's see if he can adjust to the adjustment, because he's going to get all that action. He's going to be the centerpiece of the focus of the game plan. How do we take him away? And then everybody else around him is going to eat. I remember, man, I had 9.5 sacks, man. I thought I was the man. And I was a middle linebacker like him, but I didn't sink like that. Mine was from blitzing and beating running backs and tackles and sometimes. Man, the next year, 57 Mike. Like, yo, Ray Lewis next to me, man. Know what you talking? He the blitzer. Sliding. I'm like, man. Like, yo. I'm on there. I got guys talking to me. Yeah, man, you ain't going to eat today. Like, man, what? Man, stop. Take me out the focal point. It's like I was public enemy number damn one.
Stop paying attention to me.
Yo, they would slide. Like, I would be here. Then I would try and shift. Rip. Like, oh, man. Me? Man, Ray just sitting there like, mm-hmm, take that heat, young fella.
Yep.
And that's what the great ones do. When they adjust to the adjustment,
no
matter.
No, I'm not. 57's a mic. No, I'm not. No.
Slide the end. So it's crazy because, like, dude, I'm opposite. Suggs eating. He got the one-on-one. Like, he's the real damn Suggs. Nah, man, you ain't doing that to me. They knew my moves. Nah, he gonna do that up and under. I remember I did it, and Jamal used to be a teammate of mine, so I used to beat him in practice with it every time. So then he was with Cleveland, and then he knew my move, man. I went arm over. I set him up. Yeah. Still had that short anchor. He caught me underneath my armpit. Like, oh, damn, he got me.
You got sent home.
Oh, man, he picked me up from my armpit. Yeah. Because he knew it was coming. Yeah, so he had seen it a million times. But then everybody knew it. I had to cut. Like, man, I got to get some more moves.
That's a tremendous story. I love it. Man, that's Ray Lewis next to me. No. You.
57 Mike. No, so, I ain't the Mike. I'm the Will.
You came into the league as a nobody, wanting all the attention, and now you got it. You're like, no, I don't want that attention anymore. Like, man, we say goodbye to ESPN Plus. Yeah. And coming up, is it time for the Giants to blow it up? Joe Judge says no.
Thanks for listening to the Barton Hahn Podcast. You can listen live to Barton Hahn weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio or stream the video of the show on ESPN Plus. Bart and Hahn, the podcast.